with variable high cloudiness, gusty winds. Gusty winds at times around the corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset. And a line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front. Cold blood. With tornado watches issued shortly before noon Sunday for the areas including the western region of my mental health. And the northern portion of my ability to deal rationally with my disconcerted, precarious emotional situation. Cold out there. Colder than a ticket taker smile at the Ivor Theater on Saturday night. Flash flood watches cover the southern portion of my disposition.
Yeah.
There was no severe weather well into the afternoon, except for kind of a lone gust wind in the bedroom.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome, 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 welcome to the French Connection. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host today. We've got a great show planned for you today. Got about an hour and 52 minutes to go before the end of the show, so lots between now and then. You know, going to have Ted Pike at the bottom of the half hour. I'm going to be talking about Zohar, and we're also going to be talking about Kabbalah. What is it used for? How do they use it? And why is it such a secret? And is it as dangerous a practice as some people believe, or is it benign? Well, we have to find out. We're going to find out from somebody who's looked into it. I also have somebody coming on probably later next week who's actually a practiced Kabbalist, and he has left the practice of Kabbalah. It is supposed to carry with it some sort of death penalty or something. Why am I bringing that subject into the mix? Well, this is what the people in control use. This is the doctrine that they're going forward with their conquest of the earth. And it's important, I think, that people understand how and what and why they take the actions that they do. And, in fact, I'd like to know why. And I'm about as green on this subject as anybody can be. And I don't know how much Ted knows about it, but I do know Ted is quite a scholar on the Zohar and on the Talmud, and also on the different components within the religion of Judaism and the Hebrew people, as well as the Ashkenazi group and the Sephardics and all the rest of the different parts of it. Because, you know, we want to make sure that the Jewish listeners understand, maybe they'll learn something about their own religion. A lot of Jews, like a lot of Christians, are not very adherent to the doctrines of their religion, and maybe if pressed wouldn't even claim it. You know, that's been happening, sadly, for much of the last century, and you can see a parallel as the popularity of religion dies in the nation. You also see an increase in aberrant behavior. So we'll bring that to the bottom of the half hour. You know, I wanted to pull on your coat about a thing that has been, Eric and I did a little work on, you know, it's this Loose Change DVD. And, you know, look, I saw the thing, I know what it promotes, and after I looked at it, all I could think was how this is a vacuous and simplistic and underreported in that it does not include, it's lies by omission again, which I talked to you everybody about the other day. It points to George Bush. It doesn't point to Israel at all. It doesn't say anything about Atah being connected to, Abramoff and how our Congress was buffaloed into going to war on lies, and about how all this worked into the 9/11 attack itself and how it was used politically. How Silverstein bought the buildings, why there were dancing Israelis at the scene, how come Zim Movers was running around with bomb residue in vans and being caught in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. All of these different, you know, facts were left out, and thus my definition or defining it as vacuous. It is empty. It is devoid of quality. And yet, look who's promoting it. Look where it's being promoted. Look where it's being shoved. It's being held up as a definitive work, ladies and gentlemen. How painful is that? My goodness. And, you know, this show is not for the narrow the wells. This is the show that tells the truth, that digs it out, that admits when he's wrong. That's another big part of being honorable. You know, when you go forward with honor, you admit when you're wrong. And sometimes you got to take it on the chin like a big guy. You know, and I've had to do that. I've had to do it. And sometimes you've got to acknowledge people for the small part they play. But see, here's the thing. If Dylan were placing this thing forward as the work that it really is, and as the limited presentation that it is, it would be a very different animal in my mind. I would say, bravo for the attempt. But that's not how this particular DVD is being promoted. So tomorrow, we're going to do a little short analysis of the links that are made for this DVD, what it doesn't talk about, and what it alludes to, and what kind of lies by omission are really present in this thing. Why? Because tens of thousands of people across the country are using it as a primary source for their information. And I don't think that's an accident, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's intentional. And we're going to discuss that tomorrow. But on to other subjects. You know, this job we're all doing, and I got to be honest with you, it's not my job. I don't get paid for this. I never have. I volunteer for it, so it's not a job. If you want to call trying to wake up a nation to face some harsh and stark realities of my job, boy, I don't want the darn job. It's more like a necessary obsession, a required action. I don't know. When you look at what we've had and what we could have had in the last 30 years, 40 years of my life, I feel cheated. Because I've been able now to look backwards and see the things they've stolen from me. The qualities in my life that were powerfully affected by the events and the actions these people took. It's kind of like walking down the street and seeing somebody wearing a family heirloom on their body and having had it stolen 5 years ago, knowing that somebody stole it from your house. They broke into your house, stole all a bunch of stuff that was very valuable to you, and then seeing it walking down the street past you. And you say to yourself, what is going on here? You know, what did you do to rob me of something that was valuable to me? Something my grandmother or something my great-grandmother gave me. Well, our great-grandparents gave us a constitutional republic, ladies and gentlemen, and our grandparents let some of it leak away, and their children let more leak away, and my parents more, and now our generation is stuck with the result of this massive continuous leaking of our constitutional republic's values, and our moral compass has been completely corrupted. So now it's up to our generation to reestablish it. That's why we're doing this. Can we do it? You bet we can. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take it to them. We'll be right back. Back. We've got a 7-minute segment here to talk about some of the issues, and I've been trying to get recruit as many folks as I can muster here and into this battle with us. It has had its ups and downs. We have made some powerful allies and enemies along the way here, and of course when you start talking about who's helping and who's not, of course you're going to run into brick walls when you do that, because of course nobody wants to be tagged with that you know, that moniker or that you know, that title. And of course, many of the bad guys involved in this deception or the cover-up of all this, working out of the same nest, out of the same, well, the same place. And, you know, Eric and I, what we did is we tossed a couple of things into the nest and watched them run. And so we're not done with our investigating of that stuff. And you know, of course, it makes a lot of enemies and it causes a lot of problems. And if anybody gets injured and they were innocent, we're going to try to fix that. I don't know how we can do it, but that's some of the collateral damage is what it is in the battle for the truth. I apologize for anybody who's innocent that does get caught up in this. But you know what? In order to get this message right and get it streamlined and get into people's mind, we've got to face our opponents, you know, mano a mano here. And then we can go forward with the message because, look, this is a powerful group of detractors that we're fighting. They are not going to roll over for Eric and I and the things we've discovered, or for Christopher, or for Mike, or for, you know, Ted Pike, or for Dennis Halliday, or Ray McGovern, or all of the other people. I mean, listen to what Ray said last night. Of course, his terms are different than mine, but his message was spot on with what I was saying. And, you know, in spite of what you think about him leaving at the bottom of the hour, he was supposed to leave after an hour. The only problem was we didn't get a chance to say goodbye. So I want to, you know, maybe clear up that because somebody asked me in an email why he left so quickly. Well, he had to go after an hour, and that was the deal we had. So he went and moved on to his next fight, which Ray has been fighting really hard. I think Ray, more than anybody, feels like he's been let down. I mean, we all have been. But he was in a situation where he was working with the elites in the government and believed fully in the battles he was fighting. And then what happened over the last decade or more, he began to wake up to the fact that much of what was going on and who it was going on with and for was not what he had thought. And he said last night when he looked behind the veneer of the neocons, he was rather startled to discover that it was for an individual group, for a group of people. I call them Zionists. Ted Pike calls them evil Jewish leaders. What we need to understand is it's not the Jewish rank and file. Although many of them support them wrongly, they don't understand the facts like many of the people listening to this broadcast do not. And, you know, as long as we are not able to hone our message and get it out to the mainstream, and that's what we need to do, we're always going to be explaining this on the fringes. And we will not gain any noticeable traction until we are able to hone this message down and keep the static from interfering with what we're trying to get out there. Now, the people who have done the research along with us and looked into this along with us, many of them have bought the books that were recommended. Some of them have done research on their own and emailed it to me. They are, to a man, I've never had a detractor unless it was nonsensical. I got a guy, a PhD, who tries to refute the things that are said on this. And we have done private examinations of his refutations here, and they have been exclusively and almost entirely inaccurate. And intentionally inaccurate. And I'm sure he's listening right now because he's working for the bad guys and he's trying to chronologize all of the different points that I make here so that he can know what we're doing here. Because, you know, I think probably 10 or 15% of my audience are the bad guys, ladies and gentlemen. They want to know how much I'm disclosing here on the French Connection. But that's fine. I'm not hiding anything. This is an out-in-the-open fight. And we are not going to shrink from these people's threats or even their musings. It's not going to happen. And Eric and I, look, I figured it out a while ago. Either we can fight and go for it, or we can go down in some FEMA camp or have some jackbooted nincompoop arrive at my door and start banging me around with the butt of his gun, or I can get swept up in some hunger situation after my food supply runs out, or shot dead by some crazy gang looking for food or some other mess that's going to probably erupt soon. Or we can fight now. And that's how dire I see these. I think it's an inevitable slide we are on. Now, again, everybody makes predictions about all this stuff, and I really thought that they would get this disease they had planned for us more into our lives by now, this bird flu. It seems to me to be something that nature may have had a role in passing around the planet, but I don't know that it was not designed by these folks. It's just too much of a coincidence, and these days I don't believe in coincidences, ladies and gentlemen. So, but it is a disaster for farmers. Trust me, in Eastern Europe and parts of the steppes in Georgia and Turkey and parts of that area, this is devastating rural communities. I mean, it really is. And on top of getting some people sick, it is knocking out their poultry, and many people rely on their chickens and the eggs that come from them, and it is a very important source of food and revenue for many, many millions of people around that area. And we're talking very poor people. We're not talking people who can go down to the supermarket and pick up a piece of lamb instead of chicken, or a piece of beef instead of chicken. There's some serious poverty in our world. So anyway, on to other matters. Yesterday's work with Ray, I thought, was really one of my more important interviews I've ever done. Why? Because Ray has come along with me for this battle. He, some months ago, when I first had him on, I guess it was about 6 or 7 months ago when we first spoke, he was nowhere near these facts. Nowhere. And at the time, I didn't know whether Ray was for real or he wasn't, or whether I could trust him or I couldn't. In fact, he put me in touch with a couple of other people, one in particular that has helped me immensely. And his name is Dave McMichael. And Dave and I have spoken on the phone for quite some time. He's quite a historian. He's been out of the intelligence loop for a while, but still has a lot of contacts. Both of these men are interested in getting to the bottom of the mess, and I got to tell you, we are in that. When we come back, we're going to have Ted Pike online, and we're going to start right in on these subjects I mentioned. Stick with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Scotch and soda.
And ladies and gentlemen, Daryl Bradford Smith, your host today for The French Connection. IamTheWitness.com is the website. You need to check that out if you'd like to read through some incredible documentations and listen to Ben Friedman's download, as well as Mr. Untermeyer's speech that he gave in Washington, D.C., as well as Mr. Myron Fagan's, also his research work. And lots of articles and other stuff on that site, ladies and gentlemen, lots of information. My guest today has been with me, I don't even know how many times, it's been a lot of times. We've fought many different battles together, he from his perspective, mine from my own, yet we have always come together in our goals to defeat what we have been able to identify as a threat to our world. I mean, there's no other way to put this. We are in against a dire threat that these folks have perpetrated against us. I call them Zionists, criminal Zionists, and he calls them evil Jewish leaders. In either case, we're talking about the same groups. His name is Ted Pike. He's going to come up with me right now. Ted, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Daryl. Thanks for having me again.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, Ted. And, you know, I asked you to do a little research with me and try to explain a couple of things that, as best you could, regarding what Kabbalah was, what I want to give my listeners an idea of what these people believe that we're facing here. Very little is ever spoken about what they actually believe, and I think it would be quite a revelation for some people to understand what the belief system is and how this Kabbalic, rabbinical Kabbalism is actually found its way into Judaism and worked its way out to the surface here. It seems to be that's the real spearhead of this group we're fighting.
Yes, it is. Today, a modern or rabbinic Judaism, as it's called, that's the Judaism of the rabbis or the Pharisees, basically has two primary pieces of literature, which are the authorities for modern observant Jews. They are the great Babylonian Talmud. By great, I mean it's a rambling compendium of Jewish lore and tradition and so on, more than a couple of dozen volumes, which was originated by the Pharisees in Babylon. But also very important to modern Jews is the Kabbalah, and there are the five books of the Zohar, which was also formulated in Babylon more than 2,000 years ago. And you see, the Talmud is the legal, ethical, moral guide to modern Jews of much greater importance to observant Jews today than even the Bible, the Old Testament, I should say. But the Zohar or Kabbalah is the mystical, esoteric, and even revolutionary aspect of Judaism found in the five books of the Zohar, which is extremely racistic. It has a cosmology which is very similar to Hinduism and Buddhism, in which there is no a single conscious moral authority in a God of intelligence and personality like the Jews had in the Old Testament. Rather, God is everything. God is everywhere, and his perfect a remote and transcendent light filters down through many gradations until it arrives at Israel. And Israel is the practical, authoritative, intelligent aspect of God in this world. This world is utterly dependent on the existence of Israel and the Jewish people, even for its very, very substance and very existence.
And then, I've actually read some things that say in the final analysis when the Israeli a nation becomes the dominant one, and in their writings, they will be given 10. It says 10 Gentiles or 10 Esaus per Jew. And I read that and thought to myself, that doesn't sound like a friendly arrangement for us, does it?
Well, the Zohar is really hair-raising. It's an unbelievable work of incredible racism and bigotry. And in fact, many years ago when I was in Washington, D.C., I went to the Judaic section of the Library of Congress, and there was a Jewish librarian there presiding over the Judaic section. And I said, I'd like to see the Zohar. I'd like to see the Kabbalah. And his eyes widened, and he looked at me and he said, oh, I don't think you want to see that. He says, you might not understand. Well, you might not understand that, he said. And I stared him down and I said, of course I want to look at the Kabbalah. And finally he relented and he took me back in and he showed me the Kabbalah, not only in the English translation, but the original Aramaic version there from the Mantuan edition of, I believe it's the 16th century. Anyway, he was very afraid of any scholar even coming in and delving into the mystical, esoteric Jewish Kabbalah. When you get into it, you realize why he was so afraid. It's because it's full of racism and hatred against Gentiles, describing them as beasts and animals, even demons who are meant to be ruled over by God's Shekinah presence in the Jewish nation.
Well, now if we there are a lot of horrendous things written in old documents from India, from China, from Japan even. I mean, you know, you can look at the Kama Sutra, for goodness sakes, and read into a lot of bizarre things in that text from thousands of years ago.
Sure.
My point being, it would only be frightening if it has been carried forward to today. And so this is the question. Have those edicts and pennings been brought forward to modern times?
Oh, absolutely. There are many statements by authoritative writers, including the preface to the Sansino translation of the Zohar, which very, very powerfully state that even to this very moment, many, many Jews consider the Zohar or the Kabbalah to be equal with the Talmud, if not much greater authority than the Talmud to Jews today. You know, I've been reading a fascinating book, which I just bought. It's by Abraham Foxman, the head of the ADL. It's called Never Again. That's with a question mark. Never Again, The Threat of the New Anti-Semitism. And, you know, we think of Foxman and the ADL as this really far-left, kooky minority of secular Jews who have no interest in any values of really of a religious importance. But in this book, Abraham Foxman really rather bares his spiritual soul. He reveals that he was the director of a B'nai B'rith summer camp for several years as a kind of a volunteer work as a member of the ADL, and he initiated a program in all of these B'nai B'rith summer camps to teach the young people attending those not only the Talmud but teach them the Kabbalah or the Zohar. And he has a statement in here recommending, he said, if he could have his way, every Jewish child in the United States would receive consistent instruction both on the Talmud and the Kabbalah or Zohar. Now, what you have under there is you have someone, in my opinion, which is posturing as a secular, civil liberties defending Jews, demanding separation of church and state, and bashing Christianity, but is still a very religious Jew underneath.
Well, what I'd like to find out when we come back is, how are they spinning this new Kabbalah light all over the place with Madonna pushing it? And this seems to be incredible. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, I want to ask Ted Pike a couple of other questions about this stuff. Stick with me. And ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We are back. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host today on the French Connection, my guest with me for the next, I guess, about hour or so, is Reverend Ted Pike. Reverend Pike has been a guest on this show many times before, and we turn to Ted Pike for lots of reasons. Some of them are about our free speech rights, and oftentimes we go to him for information. So today I thought we would do a little learning session. One of the things I want to go back to before we go back to that question I had for you, Ted, was not all Jews are even aware of some of these or believe this stuff, some of these declarations in Kabbalah. And the fact is, they should not be broad brush painted by these kinds of racist, you know, I don't know. It's not their fault, it seems like to me, Ted, a lot of people.
Well, that's absolutely true. You see, in the United States of America, the Jews have found an incredible promised land of virtual freedom from criticism and economic opportunity, the almost fanatical well-wishing and blessing of Christians upon them, and so on. And as a result, they've become very assimilated into American culture. And as most people know, many Jewish young men, in fact, almost 50% now, are actually marrying Gentile brides. And what this means is that their understanding, their study of the traditional Jewish religious authorities such as the Talmud and the Kabbalah have greatly declined. And so I would say the majority, by far the vast majority of Jews, that is suburbanized, assimilated Jews in the United States, wouldn't have any idea what we're talking about today. They have never read the Zohar. They've never even read the Talmud. Many of them are in the far-left group of Reform Jews or maybe conservative, and they have never had any reason, compunction to go in and study this material at depth. Now, on the other hand, over in Israel, especially, I would say, in the occupied territories, West Bank, Gaza, and so on, those settlers over there are hardened believers in the Talmud and in the Zohar. They believe all this very literally. That's why they can shoot Arabs and even Arab children on the slightest pretext, because they literally do believe that they are subhuman and racially inferior to the holy Jews.
Well, you know, here's the thing, because I've been watching as the media has started promoting Kabbalah light, you know, buy these red strings to wear for the symbolism, and and the people getting involved in this stuff are not even aware of the real meaning of this stuff, are they?
Well, here's what's going on there. You see, let me just give you a little theological history of two very different systems. Back 2,500 years ago, the Hebrew religion was a monotheism, and it believed in a theistic God. Now, by a theistic God, we mean a God who is intelligent like you and I are. He has a moral personality in the sense that he has strong feelings about right and wrong. And he can become angry at evil, and he can show pleasure at good. And so we are made in the image of this God. We have this soul and these moral capabilities. However, when the southern kingdom of Judah was led into Babylon in 587 BC by Nebuchadnezzar, they were thrust, the Jewish nation was thrust into a very pagan environment, which was much closer to the Far Eastern systems, the pantheistic systems of the Far East, which include Buddhism and Hinduism. Now, in all of those Far Eastern systems, God is not someone up there who's watching our every mood and every move and every idle word, whether we are doing the right thing or not. Instead, he's a vast world force. He's the chi, as they call him. He is literally everything. He's the rocks, the mountain, the sea. He is the drug addict. He is the opium poppy. He's both good and evil in the fullest, complete spectrum, you see. And he has a higher, refined nature. And then he degrades down to lower elements, all the way down to the demonic world. Now, that in an essence is what the Pharisees absorbed from Babylon. They brought in this pantheistic cosmology, this world order from the Far East, and they infused that into Judaism as a secret esoteric doctrine called Kabbalah, even in several centuries before Christ came on the scene. Mm-hmm. And this esoteric Kabbalah basically was in contradiction to everything that the ancient Hebrew religion had ever told the Jewish people about right and wrong and morality and justice and mercy and all those kinds of things. Basically, the Kabbalah from the East and from Babylon says God is so remote, he's so transcendent and beyond all thought and all cognition, beyond all opinions of right and wrong. He is purest light. And for all practical purposes, he doesn't have too much to do with this universe or this world. However, his essence, his light, begins to filter down. This is kind of like quantum physics. The wavelengths get more and more degenerated until they come down to Israel. And Israel is where the real action is in Kabbalah. Israel is the kingdom of God, the Shekinah glory here of God on earth. And Jews are born inherently superior to the lower vibrations as they degrade down to the level of the demons or the Gentiles, you see. And so even though there's a lot of hype today about Gentiles practicing Kabbalah, the truth of the matter is it's really quite irrelevant to them as far as a Jew is concerned.
Well, when we come back, we're going to discuss how we got into this mainstreaming of this and what the dangers are and where we're going with it. When we return, ladies and gentlemen, more from Ted Pike. And ladies and gentlemen, great to have you back. Daryl Bradford Smith coming live and direct from Central France with my guest today, Ted Pike. Reverend and friend of mine, I claim. I hope that's okay with you, Ted.
Oh, it's my. You're flattering me.
Well, listen, I got to be honest with you. You know, here's the interesting thing, Ted. I don't know anything about what the practice means. I mean, are they doing numerical things, or are they figuring out people's birth dates? Is this numerology? Is this what is it? I mean, what are the nuts and bolts of it? Do you have any idea?
Well, there's a practice of Kabbalah which is very unique to the Jews themselves, and it has two basic types. It's the practical Kabbalah and the speculative Kabbalah. Practical Kabbalah has a lot to do with magic, incantations, numerology, the whole occult ball of wax that they got from Babylon. And throughout the Middle Ages, in fact, the Jews brought Kabbalah from Babylon and brought all kinds of occult practices into the West, into Europe. They were known as sorcerers, masters in the magical arts and black magic and so on. And then for Jews, there is the speculative Kabbalah, which is more of the theology of it. It's the the theosophy or the theology, going into great detail and speculation about all of the various gradations and levels of reality between Israel and the what is called the En Sof, which is the ultimate God. And they are, these various emanations or levels are called Sephirot in the Kabbalah, and the Jews are fascinated with all of this hierarchy of angels and beings that form these intermediate layers. Now, that what I'm just saying here applies to the Jewish people, because basically the Zohar is a racistic book elevating the Jewish people to this intermediary position between the ultimate God and the demons at the very bottom. Now, for Madonna and Britney Spears and all of these other people, there's a phony Kabbalah, which is kind of like the rest of the New Age Eastern Zen Buddhism and all these things.
Astrology, being an Aquarian and all this nonsense.
That's right. And in fact, I was just looking through some of these self-help Kabbalah books at Barnes & Noble. I was looking at them as I was buying Abe Foxman's book there in the Judaica section. And basically, it's just kind of a self-help, self-improvement contemplation of the various, the Sephirot, the divisions of the Kabbalistic hierarchy. They have a few verses out of the Kabbalah scattered in there, but there's no hint, there is no hint to the Gentiles that basically this is a kind of a reconstructed version of Kabbalah, kind of fanatized, predigested for the Gentile audience. You see, what these evil Jewish leaders want to do is they want to involve the Gentiles as much as possible in a sub-level participation in Judaism. And the reason they want to do that is, you see, Judaism does allow Gentiles to a certain degree to be engrafted as proselytes into Judaism, and there are what's called the Noahide laws in the Talmud, which lay down some basically requirements for getting the Gentiles in.
Well, when we talk, we'll talk about that at the top of the hour, because I think this is very important. We're going to get into some other subjects that I spoke with Ted about earlier. Stick with us, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a great next hour coming up.